The title of this evening's talk is The Pure and Beautiful Mind. And the subtitle is The Benefits of Concentration and Insight. And I'd like to begin with a quote from William Butler Yeats from his poem called The Celtic Twilight. We can make our minds so like still water that beings gather about us, that they may see. Wait, let me start again, sorry. We can make our minds so like still water that beings gather about us that they may see their own images, and so live for a moment with a clearer, perhaps even a fiercer light, life, because of our quiet. With this evening's talk, we'll explore some of the wholesome, beautiful states or factors of mind, chetasikas in Pali. And they're associated with the development and the fruits of concentration, and of course also very much associated with the development, a deepening, and fruits of vipassana, insight practice. And all of them include a growing depth and clarity of mindfulness, the chief, as the Buddha called mindfulness, this quality of mind that needs to accompany us through all of our practice. The Buddha's very precise teachings and analysis of these mind states or factors of mind are disclosed in the Abhidhamma Pitaka, the Abhidhamma basket. So I'd like to do just a brief review of what this Abhidhamma basket is about. Some of you may know and some of you may not know. The Abhidhamma is one of three baskets, one of three divisions of the Pali Canon, which is the authoritative record of the Buddha's teachings. And the first basket, or collection as it's sometimes called, is the Book of Discipline, containing the rules of conduct for the monks and the nuns and all of the guidelines governing and living in a monastic community, a monastic sangha. The second collection or basket brings together all of the discourses, all of the teachings, all of the suttas that the Buddha gave over his 45 years of teaching. The third collection or basket is the Abhidhamma Pitaka. And this basket has quite a distinctly different character, different quality than the other two. Whereas it's not a record of discourses and discussions occurring in real life settings, which both of the other baskets are very much rooted in. But rather, the Abhidhamma is a very clear, detailed, and refined disclosure of the mind and mental processes that combine psychology, ethics or virtue, and philosophy from the Buddhist perspective into a unique and really quite remarkable synthesis. And it's experiential, meaning it's what we actually experience as our practice develops and blossoms. I think it's important in that it can be helpful and inspiring at some point along the way of our practice to actually hear in at least some detail about some of the more refined experiential processes that take place in practice. To understand a bit more of how the mind works in practice. Through the years of my practice, I've found that this information is quite interesting in and of itself, as well as the fact that this information, this understanding, can really help to counter the fears and other maybe aversive reactions and the maybe made up and sometimes fanciful stories and analyses, the misperceptions and the misunderstandings and the attachments, the clinging that can come up in relationship to what might be somewhat unusual or unfamiliar, or even in relationship to our more familiar experiences. And some of which we're going to look at tonight, some of which Sayadaw Upandita calls the Dhamma delights of our practice. One of the lists of Abhidhamma in the Abhidhamma, depends which translation you're looking at, actually, but one of the lists speaks about 35 wholesome or beautiful mental factors or mental states associated with the development phase of concentration, and then, of course, ongoing into vipassana practice as mindfulness and wisdom continue to unfold and blossom. And some of these states or mental factors are wholesome, some are beautiful, and some are wholesome and beautiful. Twenty-nine of these wholesome and beautiful states or factors are called universals. They are universally developing through our practice. Six of them are considered occasionals, or are called occasionals, and are wholesome states if they're accompanied by wholesome consciousness, a wholesome consciousness. The first five that we'll look at this evening are active wholesome mental factors that are part of both the initial and the ongoing development of concentration and insight, with the first two factors also being necessary and very active components in our insight practice. And then the last three of these five that we're going to look at manifest as active, wholesome experiential states during specific stages of the development and the manifestation of concentration and insight. And again, as we go along, I'll let you know which ones are considered universal, meaning that they're developing continuously, developing on through our practice, and which ones of them are considered occasional, because they're occasional because they are only wholesome or beautiful if they're accompanying a wholesome consciousness. So the first five wholesome factors of mind, which actually each one of you here are experiencing to varying degrees as this retreat has been going on and unfolding. The first two, when accompanied with a wholesome consciousness, these first two mental factors are wholesome factors of mind. So they're called occasionals because of this. And the first one, the Pali word is vitaka. And the translation for vitaka is, it's usually translated as the initial application, meaning it's the application of the mind to the object. And vitaka has the characteristic of directing the mind into the object. So an example in our case here is the in and the out sensations, or the breath sensations, the movement of the breath in the belly, in the abdominal area. The function of vitakka is to, it's classically described as to strike or thresh the object. A very graphic description from the Abhidhamma. The process experientially manifests as leading or training the mind to the object. And it's been spoken of many times with many contemporary teachers, including myself. It's kind of like training a puppy. If you've ever tried to train a puppy, you know what I'm talking about. Vitakka has the special task and the fruit of inhibiting the hindrance of sloth and torpor, inhibiting the hindrance of sleepiness and lethargy. And it's really quite closely connected with, quite closely associated with intention, wholesome intention. The second wholesome factor of mind, again an occasional, is called vichara in Pali, or the sustained application of the mind. And vichara has the characteristic of continued pressure, or it's sometimes described as continued stroking, as it's described in the Abhidhamma, with the object or on the object. In the sense of staying with it. Staying with it and seeing and knowing how it's manifesting. It's the continuing and sustaining, we could say, exercise of the mind on the object. So again, in our case here, an example would be the breath sensations, the movement of the breath in the belly. Or it could be elsewhere in the body, the sensation of a physical sensation of some place in the body. Just as an example. It could be connected to any of the experiences that come in through the six sense doors, any of the six sense doors. And vichara, temporarily, when it's manifesting in its wholesomeness, it temporarily totally inhibits the hindrance of doubt, and it weakens doubt overall as it develops and as it matures. There are some really wonderful metaphors or similes in the commentaries to the Abhidhamma, highlighting the difference between vitakka and vichara, and I'd like to share some of these with you. Vichara is described as being like a bird. Now, vichara is the sustaining application. Like a bird spreading out its wings to fly. Excuse me, that's wrong. Yes, vitakka is the initial application, and it's described in the commentaries to the Abhidhamma as like a bird spreading out its wings to fly, that initial application. And that vichara is like a bird gliding through the air with outstretched wings, the sustained application. And another one that I used in the concentration talk, vitakka is like a bee diving towards the flower, the initial application. And vichara is like a bee buzzing above the flower, the sustained application. Lots of similes or metaphors from nature, which I always find quite inspiring and interesting and easy to connect to. The third state of mind or wholesome state that we're going to look at now is piti. The word in Pali is piti. It's defined as zest, as joy, sometimes in other ways, which we'll go on and look at in a few minutes. the characteristic, and again, it's an occasional, just to mention this, it's a wholesome characteristic or a wholesome state if it manifests with no attachment and no self-identification. This state of mind, a piti, can be quite endearing, as many of you have described in different ways. You might not have used that word, but you did describe it as being quite endearing in your own way. And it can be explained as delight, a very positive and pleasurable interest in the object. Its function is to refresh the mind and the body. And it pervades the mind and the body in its initial stages with what could be described as sometimes thrills. Sometimes it's described as rapture, or it's defined as rapture. Though I think that this word really doesn't cover all of its nuances at all. It often manifests as a mind and body quality of gladness and joy, sometimes a kind of feeling, sense of merriment or mirth even, elation, exultation, exhilaration, and a sense of satisfaction in the mind. And in the commentaries, there are five grades of piti that are distinguished and can arise when vitaka and vichara are in place. Vichaka and vitara have to be in place and kind of perking along in our practice. And as I describe these to you, I think many of you will recognize at least some of these as some of the experiences that you've had to whatever degree in your own practice. So minor piti, or minor joy, or minor zest, it's said that it's able to raise the hairs on the body. These are some of the Dhamma delights that Sada Upandita describes. A momentary joy or zest or piti is like small flashes of lightning in the mind. Showering joy or piti or zest, it breaks over the whole body again and again and again, like waves on the seashore. An uplifting piti or joy or zest can cause the body to feel like it's levitating, which I have heard, never actually experienced myself, but I felt lifted, but I've heard that some people actually lift up off the ground. And there's a story that I heard from Saida Vivekananda at one point, and some others of you may have also heard this story, and I'm stealing a story, but I think it's okay. That there was a monk in a particular monastery in Burma who used to do his sitting practice on his bed in his room, and he would levitate. He would rise up over and over again, and go back down and rise up. And at one point, the story that I heard was that he called other monks to come to the window and look in his room when he was practicing at a particular time to watch the show, which I heard they did. And he performed as he had promised. So that's uplifting piti, uplifting joy, uplifting zest, as it can be called. Then there's another aspect called pervading piti, pervading joy or zest. And it pervades, it floods the whole mind and body with a very refreshing and bright, elated feeling. And the Abhidhamma's description is like a flood that fills a cavern. As a factor of mind, a sustained piti, particularly piti that's experienced more as a mind state than in the body, And this does develop more and more that way eventually. It has the potential to at least weaken to some degree the hindrances of ill will. And with a very focused and absorbed attention on the object, as can happen with the manifestation of jhana, PT at that moment, just in those moments, temporarily, completely inhibits ill will, but it's only temporary. The next wholesome state of mind, which can be a beautiful experience when it occurs, and again, it's wholesome if it only manifests with no self-identification in relationship to it and no attachment, is sukha in Pali. It's translated often as happiness, but we'll look at it in a little bit more detail as we discuss it. This mental factor is a very pleasant, happy mental feeling that's born out of mind contact with some wholesome object. It's a sweet, some object that has a wholesome consciousness related to it. It's a very sweet, blissful mental feeling. And it's actually born out of detachment from all sensual pleasure. And so it's sometimes explained as a kind of unworldly or spiritual happiness. And it to some degree counters and weakens the hindrance of restlessness and worry. It can be very, very gratifying. It can engender a very deep sense of gratification and ease. So it's quite easy to get attached to this particular state of mind. Mindfulness needs to be very clear and very strong when this, sukha is our experience, so that we are not attached, don't get attached to it. And although PT and sukha are closely connected, they're not the same. And I'd like to read you a little bit of a description of each of these from one of the commentaries from the Abhidhamma, a commentary from the Abhidhamma, or for the Abhidhamma. PT, or joy, as it's often translated, and sometimes called rapture, as I've already mentioned, is like a weary traveler going along a path in a great desert in summer and is overcome by the heat and thirst. He or she sees a man and asks, "Where is water?" And the other says, "Soon there's a dense forest with a lake. Go there and you will get some water." Upon hearing this, the traveler is glad, joyful, and delighted. And then more glad and delighted when he or she sees leaves on the ground, and then people in wet clothes and wet hair, with wet hair, and hears the sounds of wildfowl. And then sees the dense green forest like a net of jewels growing next to the edge of a lake. And then sees the clear, transparent water of the lake and water lilies growing in the lake. And then this being, this man or woman, is more and more joyful, glad, and delighted. So that's a description of PT. And then sukha. Ease, the sweet happiness, the ease of sukha, is like the traveler entering the forest shade and enjoying the water. And the commentary describes it like this. He or she descends into the lake, bathes and drinks with pleasure, eats the fibers and stalks of the lilies, adorns himself or herself with lotus flowers, then ascends the lake, dries off with a bathing cloth, and lays down in the cool shade with the breeze blowing ever so slightly, and says, "Oh, bliss, oh, bliss." With the sense of ease and sweet happiness growing stronger and stronger, enjoying the taste of the object, as it says in the Abhidhamma commentary. So piti, joy, rapture, and sukha, the sweet bliss of happiness, or sweet blissful happiness, they're closely connected, but they're not the same. Piti gains prominence before sukha, and it provides a causal foundation for sukha to arise. The fifth of these wholesome mental factors is considered in the Abhidhamma a universal mental factor, because it's continually developing on through our practice. And this is ikkagatan in Pali, one-pointedness. And the Pali term literally translates or means a one-pointed state of mind. This mental factor is the primary component, is the essence of concentration, as we've both Sayadaw and I have both mentioned. And and as it develops, it sustains more, and it's definitely develops through concentration as a very sustained or momentary focus of attention, the capacity to sustain attention in a momentary, moment-to-moment way. One-pointedness, when it's manifesting, ikkagata, when it's manifesting, either in a sustained manner, as it does in a concentration practice, in jhana practice, or in a momentary way, as it is absolutely necessary for it to work with vipassana practice, in those moments, it temporarily inhibits sensual desire for anything. You're just with what is, with a very one-pointed, connected, one-pointed focus. And to some degree, it weakens sensual desire overall. It's a very necessary condition, necessary state of mind to be developed for any deeply transformative meditative attainment. The function of ikkagata, one-pointedness, is that one is able to very closely contemplate the object. But it can't function on its own. It really requires the joint or the cooperative action of the other four factors that we've just explored, with each performing its own special or specific function. The applying attention of vitaka, and all of the associated states, and on the object, vichara, the sustained attention on the object, along with other associated mental states, and the state of piti, bringing delight in relationship to the object, and sukha, experiencing a sweet happiness in relationship to the object. The sixth mental state that we'll look at is resolve, or sometimes called decision. And in Pali, the word is adimokkha. It literally means the releasing of the mind onto the object. And so it's rendered as decision or resolution. And it's considered an occasional in the Abhidhamma, and is wholesome as long as it's associated with a wholesome object of consciousness, a wholesome consciousness. Because, of course, we could make a decision towards something that's unwholesome, to get be connected to and stay with something that's unwholesome. So Adimokkha is wholesome if it's accompanying a wholesome consciousness. The characteristic of Adimokkha, it's conviction. There's a conviction involved. And the function is, it's not groping around. It manifests as decisiveness, clear decisiveness. And as it's described, its most immediate cause is that it needs something to be convinced about. So for instance, in our case here, making a resolve, very simple example, making a resolve to give one's attention, one's concentration and mindful attention completely to the rising and falling movement and sensations of the breath in the belly. Just a very simple example. It's been compared, Adimokkha has been compared to a stone pillar owing to its unshakable resolve regarding the object, whatever the wholesome object is. The next state of mind that we'll explore briefly, it's already been explored quite a bit, is energy, or virya in Pali. And it's another occasional, which Saito talked about. If it's associated with a wholesome activity in our practice, then it's a wholesome state of mind. Looking at it as translated as energy, virya as energy, it's the state or the action of one who is energetic, one who's vigorous. Its characteristic is supporting, exerting, or mobilizing the mind. And its function is to support all the states that it's associated with. And it manifests as non-collapsing. So we all know when our mind feels like it's collapsing. We've all had that experience. When it's not collapsing and it's vigorous and it's connecting well and there's lots of energy there, that's virya. The closest cause for this quality or this state of mind to manifest is a sense of spiritual urgency. And there's many ways to arouse this energy. And Saito certainly talked about some of those. And it could be just on any given day, depending on where your practice is and where your energy or the quality of your energy with your practice, if it's sinking a little bit. It could be as simple as taking a brisk walk or maybe doing 15 minutes of some stretching. Some other mindful exercise, staying very mindful through it all. Really anything wholesome that stirs and inspires one's internal energy towards vigorous action, and in this case, meaning our vigorous action towards energetic practice, our practice. I mentioned there were 35 of these. I'm not going to go through each one in this much detail, I promise you. We'd be here all night. The next one that we'll look at briefly is wholesome desire. And the Pali word is chanda. And of course, desire can be unwholesome. I won't go into that. We've discussed it and you all know. But this is wholesome desire. And this means the desire to act, the desire to perform an action or achieve a result from a wholesome root, from a wholesome base. And of course, as I already said, this desire needs to be distinguished from the unwholesome desire that stems from greed, that stems from lust. wholesome desire or chanda, it's wholesome when it's associated with various wholesome intentions. So it has to come from a wholesome intention. It can function as the virtuous desire to achieve a worthy goal in relationship to our practice. And it's spoken metaphorically, it's spoken of metaphorically as stretching forth the mind's hand toward the object. And so now I'd like to basically just list. There are 27 universal or universal beautiful factors or states of mind, and basically I'm just going to list them. I'll say them slowly, and you might, I'll say them slowly enough so that you can momentarily reflect in relationship to your own mind and heart, mind and heart's experience in relationship to each of these. And some of these have been explored considerably by Sayadaw and myself. So the first is faith, mindfulness, hiri in Pali, which is moral shame, and otapa in Pali, which is moral dread or fear of wrongdoing. These two beautiful mental factors, hiri and otapa, are considered to be absolutely necessary for the protection of the family, the community, the world, and for all of our relationships. And so going on, non-greed, non-hatred, neutrality of mind, neutrality of heart that's associated with equanimity, tranquility of mind, tranquility of heart, which is a well-developed, extensive calmness, tranquility of consciousness, lightness of mind, lightness of heart, a brightness, it's could be spoken of as a brightness, the opposite of a heaviness, the opposite of sinking, the sinking of the heart, the sinking of the mind, the sinking of consciousness. So lightness of consciousness. Malleability of mind, meaning non-rigidity, but a malleable mind. Malleability of consciousness, non-rigidity again. And the next is wieldiness of mind, meaning the ability to go where it needs to go. Wieldiness of mind. Wieldiness of consciousness. And next, the proficiency of mind, meaning clarity and quickness of mind. Proficiency of consciousness. Honesty of the mind and the heart, meaning the uprightness, the honesty of mind and heart. Honesty or the uprightness of consciousness. metta, unconditional loving kindness. Karuna, compassion. Mudita, appreciative joy or empathetic joy. Upekkha, equanimity. And the wisdom faculty of the mind, which has been spoken extensively about by Sayadaw last night and two nights ago. Non-delusion, the wisdom faculty. And there are three more beautiful mental factors spoken of in the Abhidhamma. And they're called the abstinences. Three very distinct mental factors that the Buddha often spoke about that come through three different types or levels of abstinence. And the first type or level of abstinence is a natural abstinence, meaning the abstinence from mental and physical deeds that cause harm. Classically, they're called evil deeds. When the opportunity arises to engage in them, there's a natural abstinence from them due to various conditions of the various conditions of each person, conditions such as maybe one's social position, one's age, maybe connected to, in part to one's level of education, and many other potential conditions of that happen with each of our lives. There's a natural abstinence that comes up. One naturally abstains to whatever degree with wisdom and with compassion, a natural wisdom and compassion. Then there's the abstinence by undertaking the precepts, which means undertaking the precepts, the commitment to live one's life observing the precepts. So abstaining through the precepts, through taking them and taking them to heart, abstaining from killing, from harmful speech, stealing, sexual misconduct, intoxicants. Those are the five. And then there's the three more that we're taking in this retreat that some of you may take into your life or in lay life. Many people just take the five. So that abstinence by undertaking the precepts. And then the third abstinence that the Buddha speaks about is abstinence by eradication, which comes about through the fruits of engaging in the supramundane path of the purification of the heart, the purification of the mind, the purification of consciousness. This Buddha Dhamma, this path of liberation. And this particular abstinence is pretty amazing, actually, because what is eradicated, what is no longer occurring, is the disposition towards engaging in deeds that cause harm. That even the slightest disposition towards engaging in deeds that cause harm is eradicated. So the first two abstinences are mundane. They're common. They're ordinary in a worldly sense. This last one is considered a supramundane abstinence, meaning it's not common in the worldly sense, but it's of a purified, a spiritually purified nature. And the three beautiful mental factors that arise out of these three levels or types or levels of abstinence are right speech. So, an abstinence from wrong speech, meaning an abstinence from false speech, from slanderous speech, harsh speech, frivolous speaking, frivolous talk. Right action is the next one. So abstinence from wrong or harmful bodily actions such as killing, stealing, and sexual misconduct. And in our case here, there's three others, which I'm not going to mention at the moment. And the last of these three abstinences is right livelihood. So abstinence from wrong livelihood, such as dealing in poisons, weapons, intoxicants, animals for slaughter, or people to be used in unwholesome and harmful ways. And there's lots of ways that these occur in our world. So abstaining from any of those kinds of ways of not including any of those in the way that we make our livelihood. These three last abstinences function as a kind of shrinking back from harmful deeds, and so manifest as the abstinence from such deeds. The closest and the most pertinent cause for these are the special and beautiful qualities of faith, shame of engaging in harmful deeds, hiri, and fear of wrongdoing, otapa, and having few wants and few wishes. So not being greedy, or less and less greedy. We could say that all three of these beautiful mental factors can be regarded as the mind, the heart's wholesome, this is an interesting term, wholesome aversion to wrongdoing. And the last, wisdom, the wisdom faculty, as Sayadaw spoke about, this wholesome and beautiful mental factor of understanding, of insight. Which is the very path we're on, the path of insight, the path of wisdom. And it's sometimes called the path of the mind and the heart. And I'd like to read a brief quote from Carlos Castaneda. He said, "A person of knowledge chooses a path with a heart and follows it, and then looks and rejoices and laughs, then sees and knows." The importance of beginning to clearly recognize at least some of these experiential states in relationship to your own practice experience as concentration and mindfulness just continue to blossom is that with the knowledge of what's occurring and why it's occurring, we have the opportunity, we have the possibility to see, recognize, and know these beautiful, wholesome states without attachment and without identification. Very, very important. And without fear or other aversive reactions, or without misunderstandings and misperceptions, but rather with what is classically called dispassion, which is what then allows the continuing development of our practice to just keep unfolding, to just keep blossoming. In their fullness, in their utmost maturity, these are the wholesome and the beautiful states, the beautiful qualities, the beautiful capacities of a liberated mind, a liberated heart. And we're all moving in that direction. I'd like to end the talk with two quotes. One that might surprise you. It's from the book that some of you probably read many years ago, as I did, called The Art of Motorcycle Maintenance by Robert Pirsig. It's actually called Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. So the thing to do when working on a motorcycle, as in any other task, is to cultivate the peace of mind which does not separate oneself from one's surroundings. When that's done successfully, then everything else follows naturally. Peace of mind produces right values. Right values produce right thoughts. Right thoughts produce right actions, and right actions produce work which will be a material reflection for others to see of the serenity at the center of it all. That's why we read that book, some of us. And then closing the talk with a quote from 11th century Tibetan Buddhist master Atisha. The greatest achievement is selflessness. The greatest worth is self-mastery. The greatest quality is seeking to serve others. The greatest precept is continual awareness. The greatest medicine is the emptiness of everything. The greatest action is not conforming with the world's ways. The greatest magic is transmuting the passions. The greatest generosity is non-attachment. The greatest goodness is a peaceful mind. The greatest patience is humility. The greatest effort is not concerned with results. The greatest meditation is a mind that lets go. The greatest wisdom is seeing through appearances. And let's sit silently for just a couple of moments.